This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Stigma literally means dishonor or disgrace. There are some things that do deserve a stigma, but mental illness isn't one of them. 20% of the population has had a mental illness issue at least once in their lives. But we talk about it in hushed whispers, if we talk about it at all. The stigma that mental illness unfairly receives is due in part to the fact that many of us don't understand what's going on and we fear what's going on. That makes getting treatment and funding mental health facilities difficult. Have you experienced the stigma of mental health? What was that like? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Your story can help us. Do you think that what can we do to reduce or eliminate that stigma? You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org, tweet us at tprsource, and again, the number is 210-614-8980. Our guest this hour, we're joined by Terry Mabrito. She's the executive director of NAMI San Antonio, the local branch of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Joy L. Brookins is a student ambassador for Young Minds Matter, a program of the Bexar County Health Collaborative, and Wei-Yi Dempsey is a member of the San Antonio Clubhouse, a volunteer program for adults who have a history of mental illness. And thanks, all of you, for being with us this afternoon. It's great to have you.
Thanks, David.
So it's really sad that we have to try to address the stigma part of all this. There's so many other issues in regarding folks dealing with mental illness that are positive, and we'll get to those as well. But let's try to unpack the stigma issue. So Terry, when we talk about it, what does it mean? How does it manifest it?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to, you know, really understand about a mental illness is that it's a brain disorder. So when we say illness, it's an illness. So it's an illness of how the brain functions. We need to make it really clear to folks that it's not about the environment. Can be a factor, but it's not caused by environment. It's not caused by poor parenting or
it's not a character issue.
Yeah, it's not a lack of judgment. It's something that, you know, nobody would ask for. You know, none of us want to have a physical illness of any kind, whether it's the flu or whether it's cancer. And nobody is out there, you know, making choices around a mental illness. So if we can get that message across to everybody, and that includes our youth, that, you know, it's a brain disorder, and the wonderful thing about it is that if we're supported it while we are struggling with these mental health conditions, we have every hope of being, you know, successful, doing what we want to do with our lives, and living, you know, stably and mentally healthy.
You know, but you mentioned cancer, and I'm thinking back at that a couple of decades ago, there was stigma connected to getting cancer. And we couldn't even talk about it in public. People whispered about it. You got cancer, and as if just saying the word would catch it somehow. Mm-hmm. And we're able to get over that and now have open conversations about cancer, people who get it, finding treatment, beating cancer, surviving cancer. Mm-hmm. I guess our objective is to be the same way when we talk about mental illness.
Well, yeah, and what better place to start with than with our youth and with our young people? Because sometimes youth are really pretty open-minded about things. I really find that they are more open-minded sometimes than adults. And so,
thank goodness.
Exactly. And so let's start there and make sure that youth understand what mental illness is so they can support their friends, and they help us to bring that voice to reduce that stigma.
So let me ask Joy L. about that. You're with Young Minds Matter, San Antonio, the Bexar County Health Collaborative. Talk about the youth aspect of that.
Okay, so even with our program, Young Minds Matter, our goal is kind of to give youth the voice that they need to speak up whatever's on their mind. We really want to empower them to feel like they can go to their community leaders, they can go to their parents, they can go to their counselors, they can go to their teachers and speak about what's going on in their mind so that they just don't feel uncomfortable about these things. And we really want them to understand that there's other people going through the same things that they are, and it's okay. Talking about these things is going to break down that stigma, and that's the only way that we can do that.
seems like there's a connection between the stigma and the straight up ignorance about what people are going through, and if maybe we could do a little bit better in educating people about the conditions of mental illness, the treatments that are out there, and how people are stabilized and are able to function in society, then, you know, people would stop worrying about what they don't know and focus on what they do know, and is that we've got solutions. And let's talk to Wei Yi about that. You're at the San Antonio Clubhouse, and you have you have a diagnosis, you've been working on that, but yet here you are out in the world doing jobs and working and having a good life.
Yes, it's because of the San Antonio Clubhouse that I've been able to overcome my mental health illness and being diagnosed with bipolar. And it's because of the Clubhouse that I was able to find my second job at Marshall's that I've been working at for 8 months now, and I've been going to school online and working at church with children, and all of that has helped me to be a very happy person. And I've also recently received my peer support specialist certification.
We're going to talk more about peer support coming up, which is very important as we talk, you know, we get equals to equals, working with each other, working parallel, finding solutions. Let me get a caller on the line, though, 210-614-8980, and John. John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you much.
Yes, sir.
I've been at the Clubhouse for about 3 years now, and I had a head injury. Was in the car accident, so received a head injury. But, you know, it's a heck of a lot better than hanging out with a bunch of street people who deal drugs all the time. It's good to get away from stuff like that and, you know, be around people that are looking to help you out, and many resources to help you, whether it be getting a job or just even as simple as looking on a computer. But,
John,
I as a person with a head injury, I take the same medicine as schizophrenics and bipolar, which my injury isn't as severe as a lot of other people's, but a lot of times I don't act like it. I guess it's kind of it's also a place to come and have, you know, really just have fun with your friends.
All right, John, thank you for calling in. I appreciate that. Wei Yi, can you tell us more about Clubhouse?
Yes, the Clubhouse is a place for people with mental health issues where they can come and not feel judged and feel cared about, and they can be taught life skills, whether it be working in the snack bar or volunteering as a front desk greeter or calling members, outreach calls to people that have not been at the Clubhouse for a long time to see how they're doing, if they're doing okay, and when they're coming back to the Clubhouse. And we also take part in monthly fun socials with each other.
And it is a very open environment. Anyone dealing with mental health issues, and there's so many, you know, whether it be depression or bipolar or ADHD, autism, all sorts of issues. Everyone is welcome at the Clubhouse.
Yes.
We'll have a link on our website for anyone trying to find out more information about how to access, you know, everything that they offer. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, talk some more about mental health stigma here in Bexar County and where people can find help. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about mental health stigma. We put the call out over the weekend for our voicemail line, and we got a call from Kathy about that.
Why isn't there a brain center next to every heart center? It all starts in the brain. MD Anderson Cancer Institute, in one place, treats cancer from A to Z. Why can't a brain center treat brain disease from A to Z? People with brain diseases don't belong in jail or prison. They belong in safe places with medically trained personnel to take care of them when they first display brain disease symptoms.
All right, Kathy, thanks for calling in with that voicemail. Terry Mabrito, you're with NAMI San Antonio. first of all, she's got brain disease. That's an interesting way to kind of look at it. Is that a way to reframe what we're talking about? And then having access to more treatment. And, you know, if you go to have a heart problem and you get taken care of, that way you're going to have this, all of this insurance that's going to be able to tap into you, and whether or not that's available to you if you have developed signs of mental illness, you want to get treatment. That's a lot there.
Yeah, that is a lot, but it's because it's complicated, and there is a lot. And I love that her description, and the word disease is a fine word to use. I mean, it is an illness. And so, you know, I think what we see is we need to marry physical health and mental health. We've got to have them together all the time. And so, yeah, I think the caller is absolutely right. There's a big gap. You know, we're working on physical stuff over here, and then we have a big separation, and then the mental health stuff is over here. And so in our medical community, and I think we're making, you know, some headway, but from the pediatrician all the way to the family doctor, we need to have mental health as a part of that place, you know, part of where you get your physical health treatment. It really should be all together. So I totally agree with our caller. You know, we just have to find the funding. So yes, the funding is very, very difficult. Again, part of it is still stigma. And I think the way that we get past some of that, and we can, you know, acquire more funding, is that we bring folks like you know, Joelle and our person from the clubhouse here, that they can become advocates. So that's, you know, part of what NAMI's all about, is helping folks learn how to be an advocate, share their experience, and go and talk to our legislators and have an impact, you know, work with them during the interim session, go up to Austin. And so that's a really important part of making those sort of things happen.
When you think about everyone has got someone in their life who's been severely impacted with mental health, mental illness, and if they were able to tell that story and bring it to their representative in Austin, there would be plenty of funding. You know, the fact maybe is that we're not talking about it enough.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We don't talk about it. We don't talk about it at the dinner table. You know, we talk about lots of other things, and sometimes we're kind of buried in our digital media and things like that, and we just aren't talking eye to eye with our neighbors and our families and our where we go to church, where we practice our faith. Those conversations aren't happening enough.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Getting a lot of calls. 210-614-8980 if you want to join our conversation as we talk about mental health stigma in our community. Kat, hi Kat, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. So I wanted to share really quickly my personal experience and then how that led me into disability rhetoric, talking about mental health. So I was diagnosed with bipolar 2 and anxiety when I was a late adolescent. And even within my own family, there was stigma. There was a lack of understanding. They wanted to understand, but it was just, not, as you said, not talked about. So they hear the word bipolar. There are all these images that come to mind, that, you know, from TV, from news, as where people with mental illness are associated with gun violence and, you know, various other things. And even when I went to the doctor last year, one of the nurses, the intake nurses, saw that I was bipolar and told me, "You don't look bipolar." And I said, "Well, what does that look like?" So that brought me to studying disability rhetoric, where I focus on mental illness and stigma and how we take control of that narrative and how problematic it is to be able to share it. You know, if, like, for me, being bipolar, I get massively depressive episodes, and I can't call in to work depressed.
Right. Kat, thank you for the call. Dealing with her issues. I mean, I was wondering what you were thinking about that, Joy L. Brookins at the Young Minds Matter.
So that's something that I also identify with. I was recently diagnosed with severe depression. Before it was bipolar disorder, and I guess once we did testing, we figured out what was going on. And even with my family, they're all very open and understanding, and we'll have a conversation. But it's still about understanding, and it's very hard to get people to understand something that isn't talked about much. And so with talking about it and having advocates like her and like us, I think it's going to get a little better. But it is going to be a little difficult to kind of explain the situation to everyone whenever it's not talked about.
And so let me go to Wei Yi Dempsey at San Antonio Clubhouse. When we heard the story about, you know, you don't look bipolar, and I mean, do you get people saying, well, oh, you don't look like you've got this, that, the other thing? Do people react like that?
Well, in my experience, people have said, oh, well, you're a crazy person, or you can't go to work because you have a mental health illness, or, you know, stuff like that.
Wow. And how do you react to that? How does that make you feel?
Well, it used to make me feel sad, but I now know that bipolar does not define me, and it doesn't have to control my life, especially if I don't let it.
Okay. And what about educating the public into knowing that this is a really harsh way to treat somebody else? It certainly lacks compassion.
Right. And that compassion is very, very important, especially when it comes to mental health issues and other disabilities.
Okay, another caller, and Ronnie. Ronnie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm calling him because I've been with San Antonio Clubhouse 5 years, and the clubhouse has done me great because decisions that I've been making now are way a lot better. And because, like I say, you're dealing with the mental illness is very important because it's an ongoing situation. Even though people might say that you're crazy, things of that sort of nature, but you don't take that. But you know, you just gotta better yourself by looking at other folks. But you know, since I've been coming here, I'm making better decisions in my life. When things come about, you know, I keep myself busy and going, and you know, just staying focused on what I need to do for myself and whatnot, and try to share with some of my brothers and sisters here at the San Antonio Clubhouse.
Ronnie, thank you for the call, and I appreciate you calling in and telling us more about San Antonio Clubhouse. Terry Mabrito, tell us more about the clubhouse. We're hearing a lot about it today.
Well, I think the important takeaway from all these great comments and the positive impact that like the clubhouse is having, that NAMI San Antonio has, that our focus with our youth through Young Minds Matter is this building a sense of community for everyone. You know, just bringing people together, talking about it, being in community with each other. We even have, you know, in our city, we have now a charter to, we're a compassionate city. And so, you know, that's a part of really what we're all about. We're here supporting that kind of compassion. I think another really important part that's really highlighted by all of the efforts that we are doing is that treatment really works, but treatment works best when those that are struggling have that sense of community and positive relationships with others. So, you know, we can go to the doctor, we can get medications for different mental illnesses that can be very effective. We can go to group therapy, we can do talk therapy, and we can do very specialized types of therapies for different kinds of mental illness. Now, I'm not a clinician, so I probably can't speak very well to some of those, but underlying and around surrounding all of that has to be this sense of community and positive relationships. And so that kind of treatment, all those wonderful things that we're so glad that science has brought us, it works a whole lot better.
Mm-hmm. So we know that stress can be a major trigger to aggravate someone who is dealing with a mental health condition. And then if people are having like problems with where they live, trying not being able to get enough sleep, dealing with all these other issues, we got to figure out how we can help people manage their lives better so that they can be in a better state, and then find the treatment opportunities to so that they can live in a high with less suffering.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. I mean, does that make sense to you, Joy?
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's something that we even focus on with the youth, because they're going through school and they have all of their hardships at home or whatever might be on their mind, and so we have to kind of get to them in time so that they can understand if there is something that they might need to address, might need to get treatment for. But that's why we really want to get to the youth, because they are having the same stresses that, I mean, adults are having, and they're having to navigate through the world the same way these adults are having to, but they have these added stressors as well. And getting to the youth is really, really important to us.
And Wei, you talk about stress in your life. How do you try to manage that?
I have a very supportive spiritual community at my church. My church family, they're a big support in my life. They've always been there for me, spiritually praying for me, rooting for me in everything I do, regardless if it's school online or volunteering at the clubhouse or working at the church in childcare as a nursery worker.
So knowing someone's got your back is a way to deal with stress, knowing that if things really started falling apart, that you could turn to people and help you get through the day, get through the week, get through the month. So Joy L, does that, you know, does faith community help in that area?
Absolutely, absolutely. Knowing that you can go talk to your pastor, your preacher, knowing that you can talk to your deacons.
In a stigma-free, exactly, judgment-free environment.
Exactly, and that's why we really want to get out to as many churches as we can. That way we can talk to these faith-based leaders and have them understand that it's in their congregation as well. And so they need to understand and have as many resources as they can so that they can help their congregations. That way people are more likely to go talk to them.
And Terry Mabrito can talk about how NAMI works with local faith-based leaders, making sure that they have the instruction so that they can respond.
Absolutely. So with part of that whole becoming a compassionate city, we work with the San Antonio Faith-Based Initiative, and we're able to reach out to different congregations and provide some information for them. And then a larger effort is our Pathways to Hope conference that's actually coming up this Friday and Saturday at the Tobin. And what we know about faith leaders is that, as Joelle said, you know, folks that are suffering, whether they're youth or adults, will often go to their faith leader to talk about, you know, at least some part of what their challenges are. But faith communities aren't necessarily equipped. Only there's a very small percentage of churches and faith groups that have a mental health ministry. So we know that we've got to provide that education to the faith leaders, youth leaders, the pastors, and that could be of any faith. And so that's part of what we're about. We can do a short presentation to help someone get an overview of how they can work to be a stigma-free faith community, a stigma-free church, and how they can take a small step to be welcoming and understanding, and how they can do something more, a bigger thing, and actually have a mental health ministry, hold classes and support groups at their church. It's everything from the pastor preaching about mental health from the pulpit to, you know, a support group at night.
All right, we're talking about mental health stigma here in San Antonio. Well, there is a Pathways to Hope event happening this weekend. We'll find out more about that. Also find out what help is out there here locally. How is the San Antonio's police force? What are they doing in order to be better equipped to when they come in contact with people who are dealing with high-stress mental health episodes? If you got a question or comment, give us a call. Loretta, I'll get you on the air right after this break. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Today's topic, mental health stigma, and where can you find help in San Antonio? Got an email from Mark Stolge. He is the executive director of the San Antonio Clubhouse. Regarding The Source, he says the best way to combat stigma is to simply talk about it. There is nothing to be ashamed of. It is an illness like any other. Knowledge is power. Knowledge is healing. Two-thirds of people with mental illness don't seek treatment, and stigma is the big reason why they don't. When people living with mental illness speak up, it gives others the courage to speak out. And you can give us a call right now. The number is 210-614-8980. Loretta is on the line. And Loretta, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Let's see. I've lived with a mental health condition for let's see, 25 years, I think, approximately. And I've had various diagnoses and at times gone without health insurance, so I've had to kind of make it on my own. But one thing I know is that a lot of illnesses have an element of anxiety that can get incredibly intense mm-hmm. and make you have really unusual thoughts and feelings, and which gets quite scary for family members
yes.
at times. So one thing that always helps me is to go out in nature. So I think that when we think of, you know, when we're supporting our family members, if you're having a difficult period, if you can get people to go on a walk where there are birds and trees, and it sounds so simple, but what it does is it takes you right out of, sometimes, you know, people with mental health conditions make up stuff in their imaginations that is quite frightening, and it takes you out of that into somewhere else.
Loretta, thank you for your call. I sure do appreciate that. Getting out of the world that we have, the hectic, helter-skelter world, and getting out into nature and the soothing effects of all of everything, you know, God's creation all around you, helping dealing with anxiety. Joy, can you tell me more about how anxiety is an aggravator?
Well, for me personally, anxiety is one of those things that it just makes you feel like your heart's racing. You kind of can't catch up with everything. You can't kind of grasp the things that are happening in life because your brain's kind of just thinking of the negatives, and it's racing, and it's just, you can't kind of grasp it. So I'm grateful for her advice about going outside, especially when I'm working with kids now. So if anybody gives me the feeling anxious or anything like that, to kind of let them know, hey, let's kind of break away from the things that are happening in life. Let's break away from our cell phones for a little bit, and maybe let's take a walk. So that's I'm very grateful for that advice.
All right. There's another caller, Sharon. Sharon, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I've been dealing with mental illness most of my life, and I think a lot of times people who deal with mental illness, we end up in a couple of situations that are just kind of tragic, whether it's becoming homeless, which I was for 7 years, or ending up in jail, which I've had to deal with as well. I've also been involved with NAMI when I was at Hay River Hope, and I was interested in becoming a peer-to-peer counselor. But it's so hard to get funding, and, you know, I really want to help other people like myself, but it's really difficult to get the resources and the financial help that you need sometimes. I can't even though now I'm no longer homeless and I do have a place to live, thank God, it's just so hard to get the help. I still don't have any income or help with SSI or anything like that. And it's just a struggle. It's a struggle, and it's really hard sometimes.
Sharon, thank you for calling in, and hopefully we can come up with some solutions for you right now. Terry Mabrito, what can you tell Sharon?
Well, you know, Sharon, that's really difficult, and there are others, lots of others who are in that same boat where it's just so hard. I think one thing that we try to do is through our general membership meetings and things like that at NAMI, we can provide more information about how you can get help. Especially dealing with funding, disability, issues around disability.
You can get Social Security disability, which is not a lot. It's very little.
It's right. So, you know, we can help you look for some avenues to get more information about that, definitely. And we do try, again, at our meetings to provide on a regular basis different topics such as Social Security and things like that. And I'm sure the clubhouse is dealing with those kinds of things.
It's great to hear what other people have gone through and find out some, you know, how they dealt with it. But an interesting point that Sharon makes is that when you're dealing with, when you're in this world, you're not just dealing with one problem. It's one after the other after the other. It's a cascade sort of an effect where, you know, I'm having issues. I can't get a job. I'm homeless. I'm at Haven for Hope. I'm trying to figure out how to dig myself out of this. And there's so many obstacles, and I'm wondering, Wei Yi, if you have any advice.
The clubhouse is a good place to turn for help in times like those, whether if somebody's struggling with homelessness or struggling with getting a job. We have a great employment team that are willing to help clubhouse members find a good job, just like they helped me to do.
And Haven for Hope and NAMI, y'all are there? You have a...
Yeah, definitely. We are working with Haven, and the opportunities for the peer specialist type positions, we're definitely working around looking at some potential for increasing those numbers, increasing the number of peer specialists to be trained soon, we hope. We don't have an exact date on that, but we know that we're going to be able to do some increases in that way. And that's a great way for you all to, you know, have some employment and then also be giving back and really providing that mentorship to others. So we do have some things like that coming around.
Another caller, and this is Gabriel. Gabriel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
My mother was diagnosed clinical manic depression for around 12 years. And I think one of the things, first and foremost, is that families and people need to know that doesn't necessarily mean that that's a life-term illness, that people can get better. But family, friends, that support system is vital. I heard one of your speakers say that the medicines and all that are important, but family, there's that other component, and that's the compassion that people really have to have toward what can be at times very irrational a situation to deal with. But I really do believe that people, they need to embrace this, not as an abnormality, but as part of the reality of all of our daily lives. So I think the most important advice to give, not necessarily to people that are suffering with the illness, but the people around that have to understand that their cure so much relies on our ability to embrace other people's problems or other people's afflictions. I saw that a very key component to my mom's healing, and there's nothing that can take away the 12 years of sheer depression and anxiety, and most definitely the recovery after those 12 years. But I have seen her be the strongest person in our family coming out of this situation.
Gabriel, wow, thank you so much for that message of hope. Hope is a key part of dealing with mental health and helping people realize that things look dark now, but it's not always going to be that way. So, Joy L., can you talk about the message of hope? I mean, is that something that people say, give me something, I need something to work towards, and you say there is hope?
Yes, there is hope. Just as the speaker was saying, his mother was able to get better. And that's something that we really want to tell the youth, anybody who we're talking to, is that, yes, it might be a struggle right now, but it can get better. It will get better. You just have to find the resources. You have to talk. You have to let somebody know what's going on. That way there can be help for you and hope for the future. It might get hard sometimes, even after you've sought help. But again, it will get better. You just have to kind of stick with it and keep.
Do you think we're getting better at reaching out into some of the different cultures we have in our society? And people are more accepting of the fact that mental illness is not a character flaw. It doesn't reflect poorly on the family. It's just a disease, and that we're getting better in our own communities.
I think we're working towards that. I think we're getting there. Having people speak out and say that they've experienced it, of all different cultures, of all different socioeconomic statuses, as we get more people saying that I've experienced it or someone in my family has experienced it, we're going to make it something not to be ashamed of, that we can say, hey, this is what's going on. This is the reality of things. I'm experiencing things, or my sister, you know what I mean? Expanding it to make it something that everyone is going through is going to make the stigma subside.
And Terry Mabrito, how do you reach out and deal with different communities, Latino community?
Well, we want to try to be, you know, culturally competent and understand what the differences might be in various communities. And, you know, we're working hard to address particular communities, even through our Pathways to Hope conference. We have a special workshop that's really focusing in on the African-American community and inviting kind of a special invite for those pastors.
And these are the communities that really need the help. Because we're dealing typically, and I hate to generalize, but these are people, families that are stressed out economically and don't have a lot of resources, and we have to figure out how we can marshal resources to help everyone.
Well, I think that is part of it. I do think, though, that's when it really does come back to stigma. Mm-hmm. So there's a really strong...
There's all sorts of things happening.
We hear from our African-American faith leaders that stigma is still the bigger part of the barrier.
Okay, so we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. 210-614-8980 is the number to call. We want to hear from you. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the stigma of mental health diseases. And you don't have to have that stigma. That you can do. You can find solutions, find healing, help people. First thing we got to do is just make them, everyone's got to realize the stigma, let's get rid of that. We don't need it. It's unnecessary. It's not, it has no place in this conversation. And how did it get there to begin with? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Tom is on the line. Tom, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir, Mr. Davies. Thank you for your hard work and your dedication to our community. I'm sure that there's tens of thousands of people that are extremely aesthetic like I am for having your voice and bringing the community together on so many different topics. I myself, I'm a Vietnam era veteran, and unfortunately I was diagnosed with PTSD at a very high level, and it affected my job. And, you know, first it was anxiety, and then it was something else and depression. I walked away from, you know, the medical side of the house. I just gave up, and I said to myself, you need to take control. You need to find an outlet that will make you happy, that's stress-free, that you can work with other people and beat this. So I got into personal growth and development. I became a student. Now I'm a teacher. And I figured out that some of the biggest secrets are is to sit down someday when you're not stressed out, you got time to think, open up your mind, open up your heart, and find out what your dream is. Take a look around and see what might make you happy. Find a way to vent. It could be fishing, playing pool. Don't focus on, you know, pharmaceutical meds, drugs, alcohol. I've done all of it. It doesn't work. It takes your mind into a different area, you know, a gray area that you should not have your mind there. And that just adds to the anxiety and the mental stress. And I found that finding out what my dreams were was strong enough for me to find a way to vent and find something to do that would make me happy. Luckily enough, right, I found the same industry that I was studying and found a sneaky way to be able to help people that had financial trouble, realizing that that cost me my mortgage and my home and my wife and everything else. So okay. I said, okay, I have a vehicle. I know what my dream is. I want to survive. I'd like to work with other people that have disabilities.
All right, Tom, thank you for the call. So Tom was able to figure out a way to deal with his own conditions, and he was able to find a method. But I don't want to end the call with the impression that pharmaceuticals are in and of themselves a negative. That we know that there are some drugs that are prescribed to people that are necessary for them to find an equilibrium to find the happiness and to deal with the mental illness. So, Tom, it's a case-by-case basis. You can't lump everybody into the same hat. So can you talk about that, Terry?
Yeah, mental health, mental wellness, mental illness, it's very complicated, and everyone, you know, is unique. And that may sound just kind of trite or cliche to say that, but it's really true. And what works for one person is not necessarily going to work for another person. And again, it's so complicated that, yes, sometimes diagnoses, you start with this diagnosis and then maybe it changes later, especially for young people as they're growing and developing. This is very, very common. And it can be very disheartening to say, gosh, can't we just get this diagnosis right? So those things are right. Very difficult and can be very discouraging. But I also really like, you know, what he has said, this caller as well as another caller. You have to kind of find what works for you. But we really do, research shows that the medications, the talk type therapies, as well as that sense of community. I love that he said, you know, he found a way to give back. Well, learning how to give back and do, you know, what you do at the clubhouse, and those things are also very healing and can keep us, you know, they can keep us well and stable. So it's complicated, and it's a journey that's unique to each person.
So we got an email from Retta, and she asked, how do you help somebody when they refuse to get help, when they refuse to acknowledge that they have a mental health condition? And that's a toughie. I can see everybody here just kind of going, ooh, you know.
That is a tough one. I mean, you can't, you know, there has to be a point at which folks are willing to explore at least some part of all those types of treatments that might be available to them. I think when people are a part of peer-led type programs, they're probably more likely to be open to treatment later. So maybe, you know, maybe it starts with that relationship or hearing from mental health advocates like we have here about their own experience and how things got better.
Right. So Wei Yi, you have been certified as a peer-to-peer counselor.
It's a peer support specialist.
A peer support specialist.
Yes.
Thank you for helping me get that right. Can you tell me more about how you would deal with somebody who you can tell they are having a mental health episode, but yet they don't want to ask for help?
Personally, in my opinion, I would say if the person is not willing to get help, all you can do is just love them and be there for them, and more importantly, pray for them.
And keep the doors open?
Yes.
So when they finally are ready to get help, you
yes.
can say, here it is. And you don't have to worry about the past. We're talking about how to help you now.
That's right.
All right. And how would you deal with that, Joy?
I think it's extremely important not to shame them for not wanting to seek help, because there is such a strong stigma still. So the reasons for them not seeking help could be because of what they think people will think of them, or how they feel like their workplace would think of them, or anything like that. So I think it's really important to, like you said, love on them, pray for them, but importantly, most importantly, not shame them for not seeking the help that you believe that they need.
And people have gone through a lot. I mean, people have been beat up on mm-hmm. their entire life for dealing with their mental illness or mental health conditions, and they're checking you out. They want to see if you're for real, mm-hmm. and you know, you have to show them that you are, and hopefully, eventually, they'll come around. Let's go to another caller, Jennifer. Jennifer, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to say, thank you guys so much for everything that you're saying, because it's so true. I actually just got back from therapy. So it was, I'm actually doing really well now, and I'm healing and I'm doing so much better. I've been hanging on to something for like over 10 years, and I'm doing better. And like you were saying, like that stigma in the very beginning, I didn't want to ever go, because I thought like, oh, this means I'm crazy or whatever. But now it's like I had motivation. I had my husband and my kids, and I wanted the change. I wanted to be different. I didn't want to live like this. And I was living with anxiety, depression, and PTSD. And like I said, like now I'm just like doing so much better. And it's so nice to like have people like you guys advocating for it. So I just want to say thank y'all.
Jennifer, thank you for calling in, and I'm glad to hear that you're doing a lot better. I'm going to go straight to John, because I don't want to run out of time. Hey, John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. About 15 years ago, I was diagnosed with bipolar, and I'm medicated. I see a doctor. I see a therapist. And, you know, I've got a great job now due to all these things, with great insurance that allows me to get the resources I need to stay happy, stable, and a productive member of society. And I don't want to dogpile on the stigma thing. Well, I'm glad y'all are, actually. So, because it's hard for me to tell people about my bipolar disorder, partly because of the responsibility I have with my job. So people will sit around and look and say, wow, bipolar disorder, what's he doing in the job he has? So I'm glad y'all are addressing the stigma and the fact that you can do anything in your life if you have an issue and you get it addressed and you get it treated. And thank you once again so much for addressing this and just for people to understand that anything is possible as long as you take care of the issues you have. Thank you so much.
John, thank you for calling in. People, you know, once you, how do we talk about that? I mean, so like in John's situation, if you've gone through the and you've gotten help and now you're living the life, everything is great. Do you keep it a secret? Is it your dark past, or how do you talk about it?
I think we talk about, you know, hey, here's how I stay stable. Here's how I stay healthy. You can talk about the things that you're doing to open up a conversation. So you can talk about stress. That's a great way to kind of open up the conversation about mental health, is to talk about how you handle stress. So that could be something that could work for folks in the workplace. But again, that's a very case by case kind of situation. You know, you have to figure out at what point is the right point, and if it would ever be the right point.
Right.
I don't, you know, the work environment.
John was able, he had insurance, he was able to get treatment.
Right.
Those are two big barriers that we have in our society right now. Not enough people have insurance, and we don't have enough clinicians or doctors or psychiatrists available who can provide the treatment that people need. So really quickly, in 30 seconds, what do we do?
Well, one thing, if you're having difficulty with getting mental health coverage with your insurance, there is now a new ombudsman number at the state level where you can call, and they will help you to kind of understand the mental health parity. In other words, how to get the coverage that you need for mental health. So we are, you know, we do have at least some resources that can help with that sort of thing, because it's true, you're going to get better treatment most of the time if it's funded.
More information will be this weekend at the Pathways to Hope Conference. It's going to be at the 24th and 25th at the Tobin Center. This event is free with registration. You can go online to our website at tpr.org. We've got the links there for you. And also we'll have information about the clubhouse.
And we also want to be sure that youth families and youth know that there's a youth night Friday night, also at the Tobin, that we want everybody to come and be a part of. It's going to be a really a great celebration, a lot of good music.
All right. It sounds like fun. Terry Mabrito is with us. She's the executive director of NAMI San Antonio. Joy L. Brookins is the student ambassador for Young Minds Matter with the Bexar County Health Collaborative. And Wei-Yi Dempsey, she's a rock star. She's a member of the San Antonio Clubhouse volunteer program for adults who have a history of mental illness. And this is The Source.